Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK World Radio Japan, and France 24. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will hear 2 excerpts from a 21-minute interview with Simone Tagliapietra from the Bruegel Institute in Brussels about Trump and his executive order called Terminating the Green New Deal. How will this reversal of policy affect global companies who are developing products and systems intended to protect the environment? Will this create a ripple effect around the world? Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The dust is still settling from U.S. President Donald Trump's flurry of executive orders after his inauguration, and part of that sweeping set of directives was one called Terminating the Green New Deal. This seeming reversal of a signature Biden-era accomplishment could affect not only American companies, but also any business that adjusted its strategy in order to take advantage of the money on offer through the law. To talk more about what this means, we're joined now by Simone Tagliapietra. He's a senior fellow at the Bruegel Institute in Brussels. Simone, thank you for joining us, and we'll get into some of the details in a moment, but what does this termination mean for the future spending under the Green New Deal, also known as the Inflation Reduction Act?
Well, what Trump has done signals that all companies that were betting on these state subsidies in the U.S. To enhance the deployment of renewable energy sources and clean solutions in general, including electric vehicles and the manufacturing of them in the United States, now are going to face huge uncertainty. If you applied to IRA subsidy in the United States and you still need to get the subsidy, it is very uncertain whether you are going to get the subsidy or not. As a result of this uncertainty, we can expect a significant delay in the investments that have been announced over the last few months. And I would say we can also expect overall a major drop in clean investments in the United States.
U.S. presidents often have some hard turns away from the priorities of their predecessors, but was this expected?
Of course. This was part of the agenda during the campaign. It was crystal clear. And the motto, drill, baby, drill, and all the approach against green policies has been made crystal clear by Trump. So people voted him also, apparently, for this agenda. So this is now something that will have to be implemented. And implementation might be actually more difficult than what the president himself thinks. Because, for example, the very idea of saying, I want to have lower oil prices in the United States, and at the same time, I want to sharply increase the production of oil in the United States, is very difficult to turn into reality, because the oil producers in the United States need quite some high prices to keep pumping, because shale oil production is pretty expensive vis-a-vis other kind of conventional productions around the world. So it is not to be taken for granted that President Trump will factually achieve the increase in oil and gas production he desires, because that might conflict with its target of having lower prices.
Mm. You talked about some of the difficulties with this move. One thing that jumped to my attention was basically how feasible in this. Tax credits make up much of the IRA spending as opposed to, say, grants or loans. So that made me wonder, like, how much of this is really clawbackable? How much of these funds can he take back?
Well, this is still very uncertain because it depends on the legal actions that he will actually pursue. And nobody really knows the extent to which he actually intends to go. We know that certain segments like EVs, for example, electric cars and offshore wind are segments that are certainly going to suffer a lot by his new policies. He already announced a stop to the federal subsidies to electric cars, and he already said that he will act on the permitting side to basically stop permits to offshore wind installation in order to favor oil and gas offshore production. Now, other sectors like solar energy, for example, might actually, I would say, continue to develop pretty well for the very simple reason that the IRA subsidies were also targeted at Republican states. So at the state level within the United States, there might be an incentive, a political incentive, to push the federal administration to keep certain provisions of the IRA because they favor Republican constituencies. So this is something that we will need to see how it will play out over the next weeks and months. And for now, there is major uncertainty, and therefore we see already companies saying we put our investment decision on hold.
Uncertainty is not a favorite word of the business community, but one thing is certain is that the U.S. landscape for green technology has changed since the last time President Trump was in office. Looking at some of these figures, U.S. clean energy investment has more than doubled from $111 billion in 2020 to $236 billion in 2023, creating more than 400,000 clean energy jobs. Those numbers there from the White House under Joe Biden. Now, the private sector is leading here, but it was enabled by U.S. government policy and partnerships. So this is making me wonder, Simone, what kind of landscape is this Trump 2.0 decision walking into?
That's a very good question. I think we should look back at Trump 1. When he came into the White House the first time, as you might recall, he had a campaign to support coal production and utilization in the United States. Beautiful, clean coal, he said at the time. During his first presidency, the utilization of coal has sharply dropped in the United States, while renewable energies have boomed during his first mandate. As a result of market dynamics, it just makes, for the private sector, more sense to invest in renewable energy than coal. So I would expect that markets will continue to drive the game also this time around. So I would expect renewable energy to continue to be rolled out across the United States, notwithstanding what Trump says. Now, the question is the speed of this development. And of course, the speed of this development is also a function of the incentives given by the federal government. And that's where we have the uncertainty. How much is the withdrawal of several measures of the IRA is going to slow down this progress in the clean transition in the United States that will in any case happen? The question is the speed.
That's Simone Tagliapietra. He's a senior fellow at the Bruegel Institute in Brussels. Simone, thank you for joining us.
That interview is from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. DW is also available at most podcast sites like the Shortwave Report is. You can listen to the entire 21-minute interview up at YouTube on the channel called DW News. The track is called Trump's Reversal of Clean Energy Policy, and I highly recommend it. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The Bulletin of American Scientists have moved the doomsday clock even closer to midnight than ever before. Trump said he is willing to work with Russia and China to reduce their nuclear arsenals. The United Nations disarmament chief, Izumi Nakamitsu, says Trump's withdrawal from the World Health Organization and American First policy is a global crisis. A survey in Ukraine found that half of the respondents support ending the war with Russia, even if it means compromising. Only 14% approve fighting until all territory is retrieved. Putin wants to talk to Ukraine, but not Zelensky. There has been some renewed fighting in Lebanon, while the ceasefire has now been extended. Chinese AI company DeepSeek says they are being hacked from the United States. NHK Japan.
Members of a U.S. nonprofit group are warning that humanity is edging closer to catastrophe because of threats that include nuclear weapons and climate change. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists announced on Tuesday that its doomsday clock is now set at 89 seconds to midnight. That's 1 second forward from the previous 2 years and the closest it's ever been to theoretical apocalypse. The group has been using the clock since 1947 to symbolize how close the world is to destruction. This was the first change to the clock's setting since 2023, when it moved forward 10 seconds in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and other threats. The group pointed to the increasing risk of the use of nuclear weapons and insufficient measures to tackle climate change, even though 2024 was the hottest year on record. Speaking at the announcement of the new clock setting, Juan Manuel Santos, a former president of Colombia and Nobel Peace Prize laureate, said, "Every second counts." He said the only effective way to turn the clock back is for nations to work together. He said that made it particularly alarming that President Trump has signaled his intention to withdraw the United States from the Paris Agreement on climate change.
And staying on the topic of nuclear weapons, Trump said he's willing to work with Russia and China to reduce their arsenals. He made the remarks Thursday in an online speech to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
We want to see if we can denuclearize, and I think that's very possible. And I can tell you that President Putin wanted to do it. He and I wanted to do it. We had a good conversation with China. They would have been involved.
Trump says nuclear weapons require significant funding. He also said he found their destructive power so overwhelming, it's depressing to even talk about.
The UN's disarmament chief has called attention to the strong sense of crisis over President Trump's America First policy and the possible global effects. UN Under Secretary General and High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, Nakamitsu Izumi, spoke to NHK in Tokyo on Tuesday. Nakamitsu expressed concern over Trump's order to withdraw the U.S. from the World Health Organization and his America First stance. She said this worldview could lead to the collapse of the international order.
There continue to be challenges all around the world to international law. I am actually concerned nobody will be held responsible and the trend might spread.
But she welcomed Trump's willingness to work with Russia and China toward the reduction of nuclear weapons, expressed at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland earlier this month. Nakamitsu said that countries must recognize that an endless arms race benefits no one.
The United Nations will be happy to help countries put into practice what the president is proposing.
She said she hopes Japan, the only country to suffer atomic bombings, will exert its leadership in the international community this year. 2025 marks 80 years since the end of World War II and the founding of the UN.
Half of respondents to a survey conducted in Ukraine support the idea of ending the war with Russia, even if it means making compromises. Media outlet Ukrainska Pravda reported on Monday the results of the December survey of Ukrainian nationals. 50.6% of respondents said they support the search for a compromise solution with the leaders of other countries involved. Ukrainians are now more open to making compromises on the areas of Ukraine under Russian control. The percentage of those who support freezing the war and ending combat along the current front lines rose from 8.2% in February last year to 19.5%. Meanwhile, 14.7% said they back continued fighting until Ukraine reclaims its original 1991 borders.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country is open to discussing peace with Ukraine, but he won't speak directly with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
It is possible to hold talks with anybody, but because of his illegitimacy, he is not in a position to sign anything. If he wants to take part in the talks, I will allocate people who will hold the talks.
Putin made the remarks in an interview with Russian state media. He justified the claim by saying Zelensky's presidential term ended last May. He also said any peace deal should guarantee the long-term security of both sides. Zelensky hit back at Putin on social media, accusing him of shying away from negotiations to prolong the war.
The United States says the ceasefire agreement between Israel and the Shia Muslim group Hezbollah in Lebanon will continue until February 18th. The White House made the announcement on Sunday, the same day the ceasefire had been due to expire. The U.S. brokered the agreement that took effect in November and has since been monitoring it. The deal called for Lebanon's military to be deployed in the country's south within 60 days to enforce the agreement. Israeli and Hezbollah forces were supposed to withdraw from the area. There had been concerns over whether the ceasefire would hold as Israeli forces remained in southern Lebanon after the initial deadline. They claimed the Lebanese side had not fulfilled the agreement and opened fire on residents who tried to return to their homes. Media reports said at least 22 people were killed. Hezbollah has warned that it will take every possible countermeasure if Israel keeps its forces in Lebanon.
Now, Chinese AI startup DeepSeek says it's been hit by major cyber attacks. Media outlets in China report the attacks may have originated from IP addresses in the U.S. DeepSeek said Tuesday it had temporarily limited new user registrations due to the large-scale malicious attacks. They reportedly began earlier this month and spiked from Monday through Tuesday. DeepSeek's development of a low-cost generative AI model appears to be a new source of tension between Washington and Beijing. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said Tuesday the National Security Council is assessing the potential security implications of the platform. U.S. tech company OpenAI has reportedly launched its own investigations. It's looking into allegations that people linked to DeepSeek improperly obtained a large amount of data using the U.S. firm's technology.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, like a longtime listener in Lower Lake, California did this week, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please join in the fun. And if you're listening on a public radio station, there's very soon going to be an even greater need for your support as well. We will conclude with France 24. Here's a report on what Chinese artificial intelligence startup DeepSeek is and why it is a threat to American AI companies. Then two press reviews. The first is a survey from The Times, which found that people are in favor of turning the UK into a dictatorship. Then press responses to Trump's notion of moving Gazans to other countries. You may have heard that the M23 rebels have seized large portions of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Here's a piece that explains who the people are and the history of the conflict, which goes back to Rwanda, France 24.
A Chinese AI chatbot that's slated to be as good as ChatGPT has been developed with just a fraction of the money that its rivals have poured in, and not even powered by the most advanced chips.
They don't necessarily have the tens of billions of dollars that some of these companies in the U.S. have, and they are using a slightly different technique, which is apparently, based on the data so far, a lot more energy efficient and efficient in terms of the chips that it might take as well. They were able to really do this on what some people would call a shoestring budget.
DeepSeek is an AI startup that's just over a year old and launched its latest version last week. The company has boasted a performance which is comparable to one of OpenAI's latest models when used for tasks such as math, coding, and natural language reasoning. The AI model was developed for around $6 million, according to its researchers, a far cry from the billions US companies like OpenAI have spent. In the face of a US ban on exports of advanced chip technology to China, developers have collaborated more with each other, shared their work, and experimented with new approaches to the technology. One analyst says the technology is becoming cheaper and better.
I think we're in a place where there's a larger and larger range of tools for people to choose from, but DeepSeek seemingly definitely is now in the game and people will use it, but not for everything.
As of Monday, it's overtaken ChatGPT as the most downloaded free app in the US. This surge in popularity was felt as it was hit by a series of outages.
This is a piece in The Times who report that most young people are in favour of turning the UK into a dictatorship. 52% of Gen Z aged between 13 and 27 said they thought the UK would be a better place if a strong leader was in charge who did not have to bother with parliament and elections. 33% suggested that the UK would be better if the army was in charge. The research also shows a rise in misogyny amongst young men. 45% of male respondents have said we've gone so far in promoting women's equality that we're discriminating against men. A similar proportion agrees that things have gone far enough when it comes to giving women equal rights. So a bit of a downer, and it's not quite the uplifting news that you're looking for from the younger generation.
Very cheery and uplifting read this morning in those papers, Leo. And it comes on the back of comments made by President Donald Trump that he wants to clean out Gaza. How have those comments been going down in the papers?
As you can imagine, they've been hugely controversial in the UK. The Guardian have this headline: Trump's accused of ethnic cleansing over the comments. The US president said that he would like hundreds of thousands of people to move to neighbouring countries, either temporarily or long term. A Palestinian rights group responded by saying cleaning Gaza immediately after the war would in fact be a continuation of the war. It would be akin to ethnic cleansing. In the US, the Washington Post have this opinion piece this morning, noting that the comments have put their Arab partners on their guard. They call it Trump's first big blunder. They say Trump's offhand comments amplifies a new trend, his love for starting unnecessary fights over pet projects. Think Greenland, Panama, Canada, and of course the Gulf of Mexico. This piece finishes by telling us that you can't forget that foreign policy isn't a one-way street, because even superpowers need friends. Over in the Middle East, unsurprisingly, it's garnered a real negative reaction. Arab News, which is a Saudi-backed publication, reports Egypt's objection to the suggestion, as they've expressed their steadfast support for the Palestinian people. Talking of Egypt, Israeli peace paper Haaretz have this article detailing what Trump's plan would mean for Egypt and Jordan, because if Trump is serious, they would both need a strategy. One option: simply refuse, hoping that the US president would understand why their countries weren't keen to allow hundreds of thousands of people into their country. Other option is to say yes, but produce a list of conditions. For example, that the number of resettled Gazans be in the low tens of thousands and be given a definitive timeline for their return to Gaza.
M23 rebels backed by Rwanda control large parts of the Goma in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is calling on officials in Kigali to push for an immediate ceasefire. Pope Francis is also calling for an end to the violence and the prompt re-establishment of peace and security. For more on this story, we can bring in our international affairs editor, Philip Turrell. Philip, good to see you. What exactly is behind this conflict?
Right, well, just cast your mind back to 1994 and the ethnic cleansing of Tutsis, the genocide in Rwanda, which was perpetrated by Hutus. And we had at that time up to about 100,000 people, many of them Tutsis, who were murdered then. And it was only ended by a push by a Tutsi rebel group, which was led by Paul Kagame, who is now the president of Rwanda, who pushed the remaining Hutus into the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they are still remaining today. And that upset the apple cart in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo, where Tutsis were already living, who feel very insecure about the fact that there are large numbers of Hutus who are living there. And in particular, a Hutu rebel group, which is called the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, which contains members who were responsible for the genocide, which have basically been described as a genocidal militia, which has been operating in the eastern DRC. And that has led to the creation of rebel groups there who were determined to protect themselves, saying they're in a position of insecurity. And that's something also that the Rwandan government says that is a risk for the Tutsi groups living in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So that is really where all of this comes from at the beginning. And it's pretty unlikely in the way things are at the moment that the Rwandan authorities are going to keep out of the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo when they see there's so much of a threat there about Hutu groups wanting to come back into Rwanda, and also the threat against Tutsis who are living in the eastern DRC.
So who exactly are these M23 rebel groups?
Well, if you look at the name M23, it goes back to March the 23rd, 2009, and that was the day that there was a peace agreement signed to try to end the standoff between the two rebel groups, Hutus on one side, Tutsis on the other. That led to a first peace agreement, which held for a while after M23 rebels took Goma for the first time in 2012. They were pushed out and pushed back over the border into Rwanda. That led to a first peace agreement. But that all fell to pieces pretty quickly afterwards when the Tutsis living in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo said that those peace agreements of the Tutsis being and Hutus being integrated into the army of the Democratic Republic of Congo and safeguards being set up to protect them just was not respected, and that's why they took up arms again, and that's why the M23 rebels are now active trying to take control of Goma. Now, why Goma in particular? That is also, I think, a very interesting question. And apart from the fact it's the capital of the northern Kivu province in the east of the DRC, it's also a place which is surrounded by much mineral wealth used in the manufacture of mobile phones, for example. And the rebels know that if they take control of Goma, they will also have access to all of that land and those minerals. And that's why it's so important.
Philip, thank you very much for that, Philip Turrell there.
Those reports and press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English and most podcast sites. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look even harder these days because of US and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. Thanks for listening.